Welcome to Warriors Off-Court, the San Francisco Chronicles NBA podcast. I'm your host, Connor Letourneau, and today I'm joined by Bram Hilsman, host of the popular Warriors Huddle podcast. With Golden State preparing for minicamp, we looked at what the Warriors should try to get out of these group practices. Bram, thank you so much for joining me back on the podcast. It hasn't been that long, but it feels like it has. How you been?
I've been all right. It does feel like it's been forever. Every day in the pandemic is like dog years. It feels like it's like 7-8 days for normal days. So it's been a while and I've been okay, man.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, I feel like we're all going at different paces with handling this. I know some people are getting their second or third wind right now. I know other people are really feeling it. And I know for me, it's just, it feels like every other day I have a different, mood about it. You know, one day I'm like, you know, this isn't so bad. The next day I'm like, I'm so over this.
If you can maintain a mood for an entire day, you're way better than me. I switch through those moods about every 20 minutes. And if I'm being transparent and honest with you, I did have a major change. Earlier this week, I had what I'll call the Klay Thompson surgery. I literally had my ACL repaired. And as a consequence, I'm on enough pain medications right now, Connor, to kill a small horse. So if I just stop making sense, and if it's entertaining, keep it. If not, let me know, and I'll try to bring everything back together.
Well, I appreciate you you powering through and you still coming on the podcast when you might be a little loopy. You know, that's just better. That's better entertainment in my book. So I know you're working as well, right? So hopefully your bosses are okay with that.
I don't know if it's working or just performing malpractice on a day-to-day basis, but you know, let's not really explore that. There's no real upsides to that topic.
So I wanted to chat with you today about Warriors minicamp, because there was a ton of speculation, a ton of questions for a long time about whether the Warriors would actually be able to pull this off, and it looks like they are. They started COVID testing this week. Everyone's kind of arriving into town, and then starting this following Monday, they will be quarantining for 48 hours in a hotel near Chase Center, and then starting next Wednesday, they'll be starting a week-long mini camp where they'll be practicing daily and kind of getting caught up to speed with everyone. And you know, it'll be interesting because as far as I know, everyone's going to be there. Klay will be available, Kevon should be available, Wiggins will be there. And then they're also going to have, I believe, five G League guys, guys who were on the Santa Cruz Warriors last year, just to kind of, I think mainly just to kind of round out the practice numbers and to have some depth in the scrimmages and what have you. But for a team that hasn't played basketball or really even been together in any capacity since March, I think it's really important. Because we don't even know when next season's starting. They announced the other day that it's not going to be till after Christmas. From what I've heard, it might not be till like February, maybe even March, which I don't even want to fathom that right now, or because that's just depressing, a depressing thought. But the NBA is trying to maximize their chances of having actual fans in the arena. So they would ideally wait till there's a vaccine. That being said, I mean, without this mini camp, they'd be going potentially an entire year without being around each other. So I think it's extremely important.
I think it's extremely important too. And I know that most of the body of today's podcast is going to explore why we're excited to have this as someone who covers the Warriors and someone who roots for them. But let me ask you a quick just follow-up question, because I know that the mini camp was coming, but I don't know its logistics. So after they clear all these hurdles, they get through the quarantine, they get all the testing done, they show up to Chase. For that next week, is it a bubble environment? Like, are they literally staying together for 7 days and not going back home? Or is it just like any other practice? After they get through all the COVID testing, then they'll be going back and forth from Chase and back outside the bubble, I guess.
Yeah, it is basically a bubble environment. I don't think it's quite as intense as what's going on in Orlando. But basically the entire time they're going to be either in one hotel or one of two hotels right next to each other, and they're going to be pretty much around each other the entire week. They're going to be having team dinners, busing together to the arena, you know, getting tested daily, doing all that stuff. It's not mandatory, but as far as I know, they do expect pretty much everyone to be there. That's not official yet, but that is the hope. So I'm doing actually a story later in the week that will get more into the logistics. I still have to do some reporting for that, so I don't have like every detail completely down. You know, it'll be interesting. The one person that might not be there is Draymond, because his fiance is you know, pretty far along in her pregnancy, and sure. You know, I think Draymond needs to be pretty careful. So I don't think he's officially informed the team whether or not he'll be there, but I wouldn't be shocked if he wasn't there, for understandable reasons. There's a lot to get to, and I guess my first question would be for you, just what is the biggest thing you're going to be looking for from this mini camp? Like, what do you think is, should be number one on the Warriors' to-do list?
Yeah. Well, let me say, just personally, selfishly, I'm just excited to have Warrior-centric basketball stories in my life again. I'm enjoying the bubble, Connor. I've been watching it, you know, nonstop. I can't wait for this Final Four. But I also miss reading specifically about the Warriors. Having you off of your hiatus and writing pieces again has been phenomenal. And the idea that we actually have stuff to cover now, I'm really excited for. But as far as specific, there's a few things I'm excited for the Warriors' opportunity in the bubble. And let's start here. This team should be really good next year. I have high expectations, but they don't know each other, right? Steph has never played a single minute with Andrew Wiggins. Steph and Clay have never played a single minute with Andrew Wiggins. We don't know how literally the pillars, the foundation of this core will fit with one another, or personality-wise, how they will talk, how the personalities will ultimately mesh. So the idea that they're not only going to get to play with one another for 7 days, but live together in that bubble and eat together and spend all that time, I think is really, really valuable. It's a big upside, and is going to add some needed experience because this team doesn't have any.
Yeah, I agree. To me, I want to just specifically see how Wiggins fits with Steph and Clay. And I want to, and kind of going along with that, I want to see how Clay is doing physically. Yeah, I personally feel very confident that Clay is going to be at or close to 100%. And I'm not talking the start of next season. I'm talking like the start of actual minicamp, because it's been over a year. You know, the typical recovery on an ACL is usually somewhere between like 9 and 10 months. And, you know, Clay is still pretty young, and has a reputation for being able to bounce back pretty quickly. And from everything I've heard, he's been extremely diligent in his rehab. So I would be shocked if he wasn't already, you know, close to 100%. Right. But you don't know till you actually see it. Right. So is he 100%? Is Kevon Looney close to 100%? Cause Kevon, let's just be honest here, he was downright awful last season, and it's not totally his fault, because he dealt with a bunch of physical issues. I mean, he had a pretty serious case of neuropathy in his hamstring, and really throughout his body. And then he had some other nagging injuries, and he just was never physically himself. I mean, he looked like a shadow of that guy who was a real factor in the previous finals. And so was that kind of the beginning of the decline for him, or was that just a minor hiccup and what will hopefully be a long productive career? I mean, this is someone that already has had at a young age serious health issues. He had several hip surgeries early in his career. And so Can he come back close to 100%?
Sure.
And honestly, that's important because the Warriors need him to be a factor in their center rotation. They're going to almost definitely sign someone in free agency at the center spot, but you know, they've always done center by committee, and right now really all they have is Marquese Chriss. So you have Marquese Chriss, a healthy Kevon, and then maybe you can go out and get like a Marc Gasol or a Serge Ibaka or something. Then that to me is a really solid center rotation, but Kevon needs to be part of that. And if Kevon can't be part of that, if he can't be a factor, then I'm not feeling as good about the Warriors center rotation. I think they might need to make another move. So this is, I think this is a really critical mini camp for him, because if he doesn't look good, the Warriors might seriously have to change their approach to the offseason a little bit. You know, it could really factor into their decision making.
I couldn't agree more. And what you've highlighted is why this mini camp is so damn important, right? So reason one, I talked about up front, chemistry. That's going to happen regardless. Them just spending time with one another, you know, that's going to go down. So the next upside of this mini camp is information. It's going to allow the Warriors front office and the players to learn about each other, learn about this team. And that information right now, Connor, is not only needed, it is critical. You know, the Warriors are going into an offseason where they're going to be making decisions that are going to impact this franchise for the foreseeable future. I mean, we're talking at least the next decade. So the more they can learn about this team before they start making those calls, the better, right? You identified one source of information, medical. Who is Clay? Who's Loon? Who's Steph? You know, we didn't really get to see him last year. Who is Marquese Chriss? The way that we looked at him last year on a team that had no talent versus his role this year when we might really need his shot blocking and rebounding and rim running is an entirely different thing. So if they get to spend a week, it's not that much time, but if they get to spend a week watching these guys and not only figuring out individual skill sets, who they are now following either an injury or following improvement, but also how they interact with one another, it's going to help them make decisions like, who do you go after with the TPE? Who should you consider with the two pick? Can you trade down? So yeah, the more time Bob Myers and the rest of that front office gets to evaluate and put in information, the better, because they've shown us, generally speaking, when they have the info, they make, you know, the right decision.
Yeah, that's been the hard thing for them, I think, during quarantine is just the lack of information. Bob Myers expressed after the draft lottery that, you know, it's a big deal that even though they've had all this time to study film and what have you of draft prospects, they don't have basic information on a lot of these guys still. They don't have the medical information. And Bob stressed, he's like, that is a huge deal. You know, it is very possible that one of these guys has this like underlying knee issue that we're not aware of, and that would vastly affect our opinion of this person and our approach to the draft, right? So you know, that I think that's been a huge thing just for them in general, and that definitely applies to this. You know, health stuff aside, the Andrew Wiggins incorporation is going to be really interesting because they obviously got him to play alongside Steph and Clay. They got him thinking that, you know, with the space that they provide, he could be really good as a rim running small forward who can, you know, curl off screens and be a good member just in the flow of the offense. They're not going to ask him too much. They're going to ask him to, you know, hit closeouts and set good screens and knock down jumpers. And he did a pretty good job in his 12-game sample size last season with the Warriors of being more of like that go-to guy because they didn't really have a lot of healthy bodies. So he was kind of their best scoring option. And he, I thought he did a good job of balancing that responsibility while also still being, you know, sticking within the flow of the offense, which was something I was really watching closely because that's going to be what he has to do next season with Steph and Clay. And so, but it'll be interesting to see how he actually is alongside them because, you know, you can you can speculate all you want, but until you're actually doing it, it's a different deal. And I personally fully expect it to be a smooth transition. I think Wiggins already showed last season that he can do the little things that he's going to need to do along Steph and Clay. And if anything, just having Steph and Clay there is going to make his job immensely easier because he's going to have way more room to operate. He's going to have more space. So, and that's true for everyone. I think the Eric Paschals of the world, you know, a lot of the young guys who aren't as familiar with playing with Clay and Steph are going to be really pleased. And one other person that I think is going to be really interesting to watch is Marquese Chris, because Marquese Chris, if you remember, a big reason why they signed him out of training camp was because of his ability, his kind of prowess in dribble handoffs with Steph. He really played well with Steph in training camp and in preseason. And then obviously he was still kind of getting into his rhythm by the time Steph got injured. So you never really got to see what they could do together. But I actually think that Steph's return is going to make Marquese way better, which is saying something, because Marquese was actually super good toward the end of the season. I mean, he might've been their best player, you know, in February and that first part of March.
Well, that's saying a lot, but I think, you know, well, it's saying a lot while also not saying that much. You're right, but that's like picking the diamond out of the ashtray of last year's season. To look really good amongst last year's talent didn't require that much. But what you just pointed out about Wiggins and Chris, I not only agree with, but here, let me be crazy optimistic. And Connor, maybe this is just the drugs talking, right? And I gave you a heads up that I might not make sense the entire episode. Maybe I've finally reached my limit here. But I'm really excited for next year, man. And two reasons I'm really excited for next year, Wiggins, Chris, right? When we talk about Andrew Wiggins, right now, Warrior fans are rabid with trade possibilities. And I'm one of them, you know, especially now that Giannis may or may not be available. And when you look at every suggested trade from every Warrior fan, the first player who's put into the trade is Andrew Wiggins. And again, I understand why. But I think Wiggins might be in a position to really succeed next year. And it's because he will have defined expectations. From the beginning of his basketball life, at least from when I started following him, he has been considered the next Kobe Bryant. His nickname in Canada was Maple Jordan. And so he had all these expectations where he was supposed to carry a franchise. Fine, he's not that player. We know that. But next year, those expectations are entirely different. If what we need him to be is the third scorer on a playoff-bound, hopefully championship-contending team, he should really be able to do that. And I think that we are going to see, with relaxed expectations, he could have a big year. And it's the exact same thing for Marquese Chris. You know, when he's in Phoenix, he's a high pick with no defined role. It was kind of a sky's the limit. Go out there and figure it out, big fella. You know, next year, that's going to all change. It's defined expectations, rim runner, defense. In fact, when I read the draft descriptions of somebody like James Wiseman, and, you know, I understand the upsides of using the two pick on Wiseman. I know you're not on board for that. But when you read Wiseman's traits and you close your eyes, they are kind of describing Marquese Chris right now. Explosive athlete who can help, you know, help side defense, can rim run, and is can finish at the rim. So I think both of those guys are going to be fun to watch next year. They're both reasons to be excited, and perhaps, hopefully, during this mini camp, we'll start to see them carve out the role that will let them be successful.
We'll have more of my conversation with Bram Hilsman right after the break. What they learned from this mini camp could also factor into their approach to the draft. You know, it's possible that seeing what they have available right now will just reinforce in their minds what they really need going forward. I think they already have a pretty good idea of it, but, you know, I think they have probably three or four things on the needs list, and it might affect the rankings of those needs, right? Like, I think they need another center for sure. They need some more wing depth. And they need a secondary ball handler, like a more kind of a backup point guard, but really just someone who can initiate the offense and provide some relief to Steph in that regard. And so I know those are what the things they need, but I don't know what the rankings of those needs are. And I think this mini camp will go a long way potentially in helping them figure that out.
Of course. Absolutely. And one thing that Warrior fans have learned over and over again over the past 3 decades, Connor, is that front offices are not created equally, right? Some teams have very confident front offices that seem to always make the right decisions. Some teams do not. And invariably, regardless of how many top five picks they have, shit the bed with each of them and don't bring back any talent. So we know that to be true. And right now the Warriors are blessed with a front office that is, I at least believe, is in the upper echelon of the NBA. We finally have one of the good ones. But that's not enough. Talent in the front office in and of itself is not going to guarantee you anything. That front office also needs to have access to information. Otherwise, they can't do anything with their talent. They aren't able to evaluate information unless they have it. So what this mini camp does is provide one of these upper echelon front offices the information they need to distinguish themselves. And yes, the draft is one of those things. Stupid example, but if Marquise Chris comes in looking like young Kevin Garnett for, you know, for God knows what reason, suddenly his jump shot is crazy crisp. He's added 15 pounds of lean muscle. He's unstoppable during the next 7 days. Then if they had any interest in James Wiseman, not anymore. Why? You know, they just found out they have Chris. So, of course, it's going to affect or of course, it could affect whom they consider at the two pick.
Yeah. Yeah. And we don't even know when the draft is, man. Like, it's so ridiculous.
I think of you every time they announce these delays.
I've actually gotten a lot of people on Twitter and in my email telling me, yo, stop writing about the number two pick. I think people are getting tired of me writing about the number two pick, and I'm sure I have listeners right now just nodding, being like, yeah. And look, I get it. I've written a lot about the number two pick, and I think I've pretty much hit every angle I can hit humanly possible.
I'm not one of those listeners, Connor. You keep talking and writing about the two pick, my man. The more information I can get off these guys.
I mean, I have this series I'm working on right now where every week we, for space reasons in print, we had to take last week off, but I have a story that was going to come last week, coming this week, and it's on Denny Abdia out of Israel. And every week I'm doing full profiles on these people. And I'm actually talking to people close to them. I'm getting into their backstories. And then on top of that, I am doing like analytical breakdowns of how they fit with the Warriors for every single guy the Warriors might consider. So it's going to be like 8 or 9 guys.
For a large majority,
I don't know how much more I can do than that, you know, beyond what
I've already
done.
Your listeners, we just pumped our fist. Yes. You know, Warrior fans everywhere are happy. For the 10% who have already called you apparently, or use social media to get in touch with you and say, hey, stop writing about the second pick. I love that your response to them was, how about I write an entire series about the second pick? Suck on that. So nicely done, man.
Yeah, I mean, part of it was I'm just looking for content, to be honest with you.
You don't have to explain it to me. Let's just say
I'm but, not. But also part of it is I'm interested in all this stuff. You know, I'm kind of a draft nerd, and I've never really gotten the chance to cover the draft like this before because the Warriors would always make the finals and then they had like a week to prepare for the draft and then have like
count
a late first round pick or early second round pick. And then that was that.
Yeah. Careful what you wish for. A large majority of my Warriors fandom was spent doing nothing but looking at, obsessing over, and hoping for the draft. So, you know,
yeah, those, and then you draft, you know, Todd Fuller and, you know,
Bontego Cummings. I was there. What are you, like, poking a wound? I know what we suffered through. I don't need to read. And let's just focus back on the two pick and the series you have. I don't want to jump back down the Warriors' terrible draft history. But something's been bothering me, and I should have pulled on this string right at the beginning of the episode, because you mentioned that everything in the NBA world keeps getting pushed back. And the inference is the reason they're doing that is they want to see how fans return to the NFL works. Because maybe the NBA will allow fans to return to their own bubble, which leads to this question. you're not from the future. You don't work for the front office. You don't know. But right now, if you had to guess, do you think there will be fans in an NBA arena during the 2021 season?
Just a guess, I would say I think there's going to be some level of fans, yes. I think in a best case scenario to start the season, you have maybe half capacity. In my mind, I think that's possible. You see the NFL, not in this market, not in San Francisco, but you see the NFL in other markets having fans. College football has fans. Yep. I don't think that's the smartest thing in the world, but it's happening. And so the NBA will definitely do everything in their power to make sure they can have some fans, because that's a lot of money at the gate that they're losing every time they don't have fans. And to go an entire another season without it would be rough, which is why they're willing to wait, as long as they need to. So I do think there will be, and I also think that there's a good chance that we're not going to have the NBA until close to springtime, which is depressing to even talk about. Because I don't know about you, but I am really ready to watch some Warriors basketball and actually go to games again and feel like a real beat writer.
I'm so excited for the mini camp. I've been sweating for the last 25 minutes. Yeah, dude, I'm ready to have Warriors basketball back in my life.
Yeah, for sure. Is there anything else that you're going to be looking for? For me, it's not as important, but one thing that I'm going to be watching is just what's going on with some of the young guys, because, you know, the Warriors are going to be facing a numbers crunch roster-wise. And so you're looking at guys like Kai Bowman, Juan Toscano-Anderson, Michael Mulder, technically Marquese Chriss because his contract's not guaranteed, but I'm 99.9% sure he'll be on the team next season. So really you're looking at Kai Bowman, Juan Toscano-Anderson, and Michael Mulder. And then there's also Chasen Randle and Bender. I don't even think Bender's around anymore. I don't think he'll be there at minicamp. And then Randle almost definitely will not be on the team next season. So the truth is, there's out of those three guys, out of Bowman, Toscano-Anderson, and Mulder, best case scenario, one of them makes it. I mean, if you just look at the numbers and what the Warriors are trying to accomplish this offseason, I think there's a chance none of them make it. I think there's a good chance that like one of them makes the 15 man, and then maybe another one or two of them get two-way contracts. But this will be a really kind of important audition in a sense for them, because they didn't get to play with Steph and Clay last season. And so if they can show something alongside Steph and Clay, I think that'll really help their chances of, being a factor going forward.
Sure. In addition to back end of the roster decisions, who gets to continue to actually remain a Golden State Warrior, I'm interested in the development of the almost back of the roster guy. Jordan Poole. It started off the year, couldn't hit the backboard on a three-pointer if his life depended on it. Towards the end of the year, the shot started falling a little bit. He kind of figured himself out. Who is he? What kind of development has he had since the last time we saw him on the floor? Alan Smilagic, there was a period of time during last year where we were fawning over Smiley. Young kid, limitless potential, it had dominated in the G League and had finally come up and had his shot. And then that shine kind of wore off. So I'd like to see, where is he? What's happened since then? Has there been the kind of development we were hoping for when he was the G League star? So, there will be little things, if you are interested, that can be really important for the future that hopefully will reveal themselves.
Yeah, you make an interesting point about Smiley, because I felt like he regressed as the course of the season went on. He had some nice flashes of things early in the season, but the reality is he had no idea what he was doing the whole time. I mean, I talked to someone in the front office who said that Smiley didn't understand more than a quarter of the playbook. language barrier and other things. I mean, he's starting to become more fluent in English. But, you know, he was splitting a lot of time between Santa Cruz and Golden State. And I think it was hard, especially for a young guy like that. But I don't think they were super pleased with what they saw toward the end of the year. He didn't finish the year on a good note. There were times where he just flat out looked like he had no business being on a basketball court. Like he looked like he, like if you or I was out there, like he just looked completely deer in headlights. Like he had no idea what he was doing. And, you know, I know that they anticipated a little bit of that, because this is a guy who's 19 years old. Before he played in the G League the previous season, he had never played higher than the Serbian third division, which is like a glorified rec league basically. And so there was going to be a major learning curve, but you know, he, given the roster crunch that I just alluded to, there is a chance that they could see, if they don't see anything out of him in minicamp and they don't see any progress and they're really facing a serious numbers crunch and they really like Kai Bowman or Juan Toscano or Michael Mulder and they want to keep him around, it's not out of the realm of possibility for them to cut Smiley this offseason. Because he does have a guaranteed deal, but it's a low level minimum deal. And it's possible that they could cut him. I don't think they will, because I think they're curious enough about his upside to give him another year. But to prove himself, but I think there's a chance that they could end up cutting him. And one thing I'm curious, just as a fan, you know, as someone who watches the games, goes to the games, who of those three guys, of Juan Toscano Anderson, Michael Mulder, and Kai Bowman, do you like the most?
Well, during the Black Lives Matter, Juan Toscano Anderson's name came up a lot because he was leading a series of movements. And I really respected his involvement in the community. And so his name is the first that popped up in my mind, but it's for completely unrelated basketball reasons, right? If I'm focusing only on what they did for the Warriors on the floor, it would most likely be Kai Bowman. But let me put it this way. If they lost all three, I wouldn't be heartbroken.
Yeah. I agree with that assessment. I agree with the assessment that if they lost all three, it wouldn't be the end of the world. I think that, honestly, I do think that Juan Toscano Anderson, I don't think this was his intention. I think he had very genuine intentions putting together the Black Lives Matter protest, but I actually do think it might have helped his roster status, because I talked to Steve recently, and Steve Kerr, and he was effusive about how impressed he was with just who Juan is as a person and what he's done in the community. And honestly, when you're talking about like the 15th guy, 14th, 15th guy, that stuff matters. You know, you want, it's a nice storyline. It's, you have a local guy doing good in the community, you know, who was undrafted. Like that is a nice narrative to have at the end of your bench.
Dude, and practically speaking, if I'm remembering right, the people at that rally included like Steph and Clay and the big boys.
Yeah, which showed a certain level of respect, you know, from his teammates.
And friendship, right? I mean, like if Juan Toscano Anderson had to exchange texts with those guys just to get them to the parade, and I'm sure they did, just logistically, right? The way that human nature works is if they developed a friendship because of that, you know, not like ass kissy, just literally, just because if by working together to help put that protest together, he got to know the Splash Brothers better, then does he have a gigantic advantage over the other two names you mentioned? Of course he does. Of course he does. But I think that we can bring this back to the main point of the podcast. And it's last year, the Warriors had a series of placeholders. They weren't trying to succeed. They just tried to get through the year. This year, they need to see how some of those placeholders will actually play a role. And the quickest way to do that is by getting information through this training camp. Minicamp.
Yeah. And like one thing that's going to be really important next season is you need the guys who got significant, the young guys who got significant minutes last season, like Jordan Poole and Damian Lee, you know, those, that caliber of guy, you need them to show you that you can put him on the floor in a playoff game and not freak out. You know, you need for the Warriors to win the title next season, they need at least 8, 9, or 10 guys who they feel genuinely 100% confident they can put in meaningful moments in a playoff game and not have to worry about it. And yep. I personally am not 100% confident that someone like Damian Lee is ready for that moment, or you would feel comfortable having him in that moment. But if he can prove in mini camp and going forward that he can be, that would raise the ceiling in my mind on this team, outlook next season, because that type of depth really matters when you're talking about the postseason.
I absolutely agree with you, and then you just identified a topic for a future podcast, one I hope that we'll really get to explore. But it's, if the Warriors are as good as we hope they might be next year, championship contention, top four in the West, good, then how can some of these smaller pieces perform when it really matters? Because watching, for example, the Clippers and players like Montrezl Harrell fall apart when they really, really needed him not to, identifies how things change for role players when they're playing the first 82 as opposed to the final 16. But, you know, hopefully we can have that concern next year. Right now we're talking about a team with the worst record in the NBA. So we can save that question down the line.
Side note, how crazy has this bubble been? I mean, wow, that game last night with the Clippers and the Nuggets. Who saw that coming? I mean, I guess Wes Goldberg did, who we had on your podcast recently. And he,
actually accurate, yeah. Props to Wes.
But I didn't. I'll admit I didn't. And
not only did I not, I thought I had taken too many of my pain meds. I was like, there's no way this is real. Like, I called my wife back to be like, are you seeing this score too? Or am I just hallucinating entirely?
Bram, thank you so much for coming on the pod. I really appreciate all your insight and, especially powering through those pain meds. You didn't sound too loopy to me, but there might've been a couple moments where it came through. Where can our listeners find your podcast, Warriors Huddle, which I'm a huge fan of?
I really appreciate it. There's not a whole lot of upsides to really deep drug history, but one of them is that when you have to pod through pain medications, there's no problem. So it really came together for me here. If you want to check us out, we're at the Warriors Huddle. You can find us anywhere podcasts are played. And if you disagreed with some of my takes, liked them, hated them, anything, I'd love to hear it. You can reach us. Twitter account is @WarriorsHuddle. And our email account is unprofessionallywarriorshuddle@gmail.com. So send the hate or the love. Both are welcome.
Our thanks to Bram Hilsman for joining me on the podcast. Always love his insight.